accuracy errors or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to the American Federation of Government Employees Inside Government Program, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power and MetLife. Now here's your host, Jason Fornicola.
This week we'll discuss the Itzhak Rabin Public Service Award with this year's recipient, AFGE National Secretary Treasurer J. David Cox and Rabin Center Chair Dahlia Rabin. And later, we'll sit down with Congressman Chris Van Hollen and First Command Financial Services District Advisor Bob Hill from the recent Excellence in Government Conference. But up first, J. David Cox, AFGE National Secretary Treasurer. Welcome back to the program.
Thank you very much, Jason. Glad to be back.
You have been honored by the American Friends of the Itzhak Rabin Center with the 2012 Itzhak Rabin Public Service Award. Tell us about the award.
I was notified back at the end of last year that I had been chosen to be the honoree this year for the Rabin Center. Needless to say, when they first called me, I said, "Who, me?" I was very humbled. Obviously, the Itzhak Rabin, the Prime Minister of Israel, such a great leader. As we all know, he was assassinated in the 90s after he had been a key player in negotiating peace in the Middle East, received the Nobel Peace Prize, and to be anywhere close associated with that process is just simply amazing.
What went into that process? Talk about the criteria that winners are selected upon.
The American Friends of the Itzhak Rabin Center each year choose a labor leader as the honoree and to present the award to. There's a board that's made up. Some of them are labor leaders. There are many other people that have certainly worked with the Rabin Center for many years. There's an advisory board of a former Secretary of State, Henry Kissinger, Madeleine Albright, those folks, and as well as Dahlia Rabin, the Prime Minister's daughter, serves on this board, and they are involved in choosing the honoree.
What does this award mean to you personally as someone who has dedicated his life to public service and the labor movement?
It's pretty overwhelming, Jason, to say the least, and it's amazing to think about public service. The Prime Minister himself had dedicated his life to public service to Israel and had worked very hard for the government employees and the public employees there. He was head of the Labor Party, a tremendous leader in public service, had given his entire life to public service. So I think that it's a chance to say, yes, people want to be public servants. People want to work for the government and provide good government. They like to be nurses at VA medical centers. They like to be school teachers. They like to be firefighters. They like to prepare Social Security claims for people. Those things are very, very important.
We've seen in the recent past, public employees have been under attack at almost every level of government. Does this award have special meaning to you, given that it's being awarded at this time, at such a critical and difficult time for public employees?
Oh, it certainly does, Jason, because everywhere you turn, be it in a county, a city, a state, on the federal level, public employees are under constant attack. It's cut their pay, get rid of their retirement, cut their health insurance, basically do away with them. I mean, I don't understand how we just say wipe out all the school teachers, wipe out universities and community colleges, wipe out the fire departments. Those are just unconscionable things. And on a federal level, let's just get rid of Social Security and Medicare. Let's just get rid of the VA. If you look at the proposals of some of the budgets on Capitol Hill, they basically would wipe out every department of the federal government.
Now, you're in some pretty good company with previous winners of this award. I'm looking here, Cecil Roberts, Randy Weingarten, James Hoffa. Talk about that, about being in that same breath with those labor leaders.
Well, Itzhak Rabin himself was a mountain, and when I look at some of the past recipients of the award, they are certainly gigantic labor faces on that mountain. I mean, Randy Weingarten is leading a fantastic charge with the American Federation of Teachers. She's a true champion in fighting not just for teachers, but for public education, for the fact that every child in this country from kindergarten up deserves the right to a good quality education. And Randy is leading that charge. And Cecil Roberts with the mine workers, I mean, I can't think of a union that has just been such a champion throughout life like the mine workers in blazing the trails for safety in the workplace and such hazard work to begin with. And when Cecil led the charge with the Pittston strike back in the 80s, he was probably one of the most courageous labor leaders. And Terry Sullivan with the laborers, I mean, Terry is just a fantastic person, leads a lot of hard-working men and women that build all type structures, and that they are the laborers. They're the sweat in every major structure in this country. And Jimmy Hoffa with the Teamsters, and I know I'm sort of running on and on, but these are fantastic folks. As a kid growing up, I distinctly remember the rich kids in the neighborhood. Their daddies drove trucks. They were Teamsters. So, I mean, I learned very early on in my life the importance of the Teamster Union and what it did for working men and women.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. We're joined by J. David Cox, AFGE's National Secretary Treasurer. J. David, you mentioned some lessons that you learned as a youngster about the labor movement. What brought you to this idea that the labor movement was a path that you wanted to take your career down?
Well, I think very early on, living in Kannapolis, North Carolina, a home of cannon mills, and seeing many years of struggle of the cotton mill workers to try to form and join a union, and repeated election after election. The company would certainly do every trick in the world they could to see that election did not occur and did not come off properly. And the fact that the workers were so underpaid and so mistreated. When people have a union, there is fairness in the workplace. They get to collectively bargain a contract. They get a say in the process. They don't always get everything they want in a contract, as that does not happen. But the bottom line, they get to collectively bargain with their employer, and there's a lot to be said for that.
How important is it for workers to collectively bargain, to have a say in the workplace, to have a say over their safety at the workplace?
That extremely important. You take with the miners. I mean, we've had some tragedies with mine workers in this country over the last several years, and usually those tragedies have been in mines where the employees weren't unionized and where there had been repeated violations on the inspections of those mines. But it was about, you know, corporate greed. It was not about the safety of workers. I think all union members and all workers want their companies, their government, be it whatever level, to be a very successful organization, to certainly provide goods and services, to make profits, and to be successful companies and successful governments. But they want employees to be treated fairly and to have a safe working place. And health and safety is always a big issue in any job, no matter what job you are in.
We know that you started your career in the VA in North Carolina as a registered nurse, working for a number of years there. How have things changed over the years throughout your career in the labor movement?
Well, while I've actually seen the labor movement, I've seen AFGE's membership steadily incline and grow. As such, we just had another very, very successful month of a net gain of over 3,000 new members in AFGE. The overall labor movement nationwide has been on a decline, and for the last several years has basically been flatlined. And as we have seen the decline in organized labor in this country, we have seen the decline in the middle class. We've seen everyone's wages and benefits be affected in that process.
Let's talk about that for a minute. The labor movement holding steady or declining in some areas, but AFGE continues to grow. Talk about the effort that you have put into organizing federal workers into AFGE members.
Well, organizing members for AFGE, that's the fun thing that I get to do in my job, and I think everybody likes signing people up. It's such a rewarding experience to talk to people about the union, to see them join this union, and see them later on become officers and leaders in this union. Today, I'm leaving after I finish with you in this interview and going and doing a lunch and learn with one of our local facilities to talk to people about the fact the attacks that they're under on Capitol Hill for retirement and pay and their agencies, and the fact that the only entity fighting those battles is AFGE. The only person out there working on the behalf of the government worker is AFGE. So I love to do that. That's a fun thing.
Those of us who work with you know that you approach your job with a lot of passion and a lot of enthusiasm, but does receiving this award from the Rabin Center reignite that enthusiasm or give you more passion towards what you're doing?
Jason, I don't view this as a recognition for past achievements. I view it as something that inspires me and requires me to do more in the future, to work harder, to continue to build the labor movement, to fight harder for workers' rights, and to fight it with everything that I've got for the middle class in this country and the working class, that they have the ability to buy homes, educate their children, and have enough money to live on in their retirement. Those are the things that it really motivates me to do.
When you look into the future, what are some challenges that you see federal employees facing, and how do you plan to combat those challenges?
I see a continued push to erode away at retirement and pay and the number of federal workers on all levels. I see that coming, and I see that pretty much as a bipartisan move. It doesn't matter whether you're a Republican or a Democrat. You seem to be now talking about let's take away from federal employees and try to trim back. Things that I believe that we have to do, that we have to continue to demonstrate the fact that people do need good government and want good government, that it's unconscionable for veterans to wait for months on end or a year for their claim to be processed, or to be waiting for months before they can be seen in a VA medical center, or for people that are disabled, again, to be waiting for long periods of time before they can receive their Social Security. These are folks that we as a country and as society have made a commitment to, and we need to deliver on those commitments. And I think people want their borders protected. And while I hear people kind of complain about the scrutiny they go through with boarding airplanes in this country, the bottom line, since there's been the establishment of TSA, we have not had hijackings. We have not had bombings. We have not had airplanes crashing into buildings and taking this country hostage. So those folks, again, are doing a very, very good job. And it is not the workers that's trying to do their job that's creating the problems for the American public. It's the terrorist that would harm this country that's creating the problems.
Talk about what Prime Minister Rabin has meant to you in your career as a federal employee and then also as a labor leader.
Well, I did not personally know Prime Minister Rabin, and this year would have been his 90th birthday. When I read about him and I look at various literatures and various videos, he was a superb leader. He worked so hard in the founding of Israel as a country, and you know, had a great deal of concern and understanding that there was a need for a nation of Israel, particularly after the experience of the Holocaust of the Second World War. And the fact that he was sat down with Muslims, Christians, and Jews and said, it's a small area, it's a small country, we have to live together, we have to get along, we have to respect one another's religions, one another's differences, but the fact that we are all human beings, and we use the word tolerance at times, but I would like to use the word acceptance and respect. And I believe that was the message of Prime Minister Rabin, one of the greatest individuals that ever lived. And I joined with President Clinton when he said, had he lived, I believe there would be peace in the Middle East.
When you think about his efforts to bring people together, are those things that you would try to incorporate into your own career, in your own life?
Oh, clearly. I mean, AFGE, when I look at our union, we are a very, very large tent in every form and respect. I mean, we our members are from ever political persuasion. They are from ever ethnicity and ever color and every creed and religion. You name it, whoever, whatever, that's AFGE, and from all walks of life. But yet, you know, we all have one thing in common. That's, fighting for the rights of government employees and the fact that we want government employees to provide very, very good government services.
You'll also be getting a room named after you at the Rabin Center, correct?
That's correct, Jason. They'll be naming the executive conference room at the Rabin Center after AFGE and me. And I would certainly say this honor, while I am the individual receiving this honor, the honor comes to AFGE. And I know every one of the past recipients of the honor would also use that same term. It is their union and the courage and the things that their union has done that has created that process.
J. David Cox, AFGE National Secretary Treasurer. J. David, thank you so much for your time and congratulations on this award.
Thank you so much, Jason. I really appreciate it.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. I'm your host, Jason Fornicola, and up next, we'll continue our discussion about the Yitzhak Rabin Public Service Award with Rabin Center Chair Dalia Rabin.
Attention AFGE members, are you in need of a new computer or home appliance but can't spare the upfront cash? Discover Purchasing Power, an exclusive benefit available to AFGE members where you can buy brand name laptops, tablets, and home appliances through 12 months of easy payroll deduction. No upfront cash or credit check required. Shop now and get an 8% AFGE member only discount with promo code AFGE member. That's all one word. Learn more, visit shoppurchasingpower.com today.
Did you know MetLife Auto and Home has valuable deals on insurance for AFGE members that could save them hundreds every year? Benefits include special discounts just for being an AFGE member, and in most states, a deductible credit for claim-free driving up to $250. To see how much you could save, call the AFGE Benefits Hotline at 1-888-844-2343 to get the members-only phone number from MetLife. That's 1-888-844-2343. Underwritten by Metropolitan Group Property and Casualty Insurance Company, Warwick, Rhode Island.
Welcome back to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. We've been joined by Dalia Rabin, the chair of the Yitzhak Rabin Center in Israel, as well as the daughter of the former Israeli prime minister. Dalia, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
You join us here today as AFGE National Secretary Treasurer J. David Cox has been honored by the American Friends of the Yitzhak Rabin Center with its 2012 Public Service Award, an award that honors those whose work reflects the legacy of your father, the late Israeli Prime Minister. Tell us more about the award.
This award, we decided to bestow on people who symbolize parts or more than parts of my father's legacy. And Jay David was in Israel before we decided to honor him. And he came with another union delegation, the Layuna delegation, chaired by Cecil Roberts. This was 2 years ago, and he fell in love with Israel and with our project especially. He was very excited by what we do there. And since then, he was in touch with us. And, of course, being the head of FG, it's something that we are focusing on, encouraging good civil servants and better government service, something we are involved also in Israel. And so it seemed that he is very much exactly the type to get to be honored by the Rabin Center.
He is in some tremendous company within the labor movement in winning this award. What are some of the criteria that you use yearly to select the winners?
It's more or less what I already said. It's people who are devoted to do, and actually people who commit their whole lives to do something to better the equality of life of the workers, especially, and human beings in general. And we check the record of the potential honorees, and then we decide who is going to be the next chosen.
In winning the award, how does J. David represent those ideals and values that your father stood for and tried to instill in others? You'd mentioned that he came to Israel. You had a chance to meet him. He visited the center. What were some things that you saw in him during that time?
First of all, he himself served as a nurse, and he's leading workers that are in the service of the people for many years. And this is part of my father's vision, to have people devote their life and focus on making people's life better and helping the needy and being aware and open-minded to the needs of all sectors in society.
You had mentioned, of course, that J. David is a nurse. He spent a number of years working in the Department of Veterans Affairs. I believe he was the first nurse to win this award. How did that background, do you think, help prepare him for going down this path of serving others?
I think the answer lies in your question, because if you are really ready to serve as a nurse for veterans, it's to itself, it shows about your character, about your willingness to mobilize your whole energy to help people as a beginning, and then to lead bigger crowds and bigger movement towards a better life of future generations of workers, of course.
Many times here in the political discussions in the United States, public workers have come under attack. How important is it, do you think, to push back against those attacks and really highlight the work that public employees do?
I don't really want to speak about your problems, but I know from Israeli point of view, I come from the arena because I was serving as the legal advisor of the union in Israel. And I'm very well aware of the importance of uniting the workers, defending their rights. And I also come from a family that is well known for doing that for generations.
How proud are you to have stood on behalf of public employees in Israel and highlighting the work that they do?
This was, I think, one of the most interesting and intriguing and exciting years of my life, when I served as the real protector of laborers' rights. I was involved in the biggest strikes in Israel against the government, fighting for different changes in the pension system. So I'm very, very well into it, and I enjoyed doing that, standing on the barricades against the government, trying to improve the conditions of the workers' pension funds.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, and we're speaking with Dalia Rabin, the chair of the Itzhak Rabin Center in Israel. Dalia, how can the labor movement help in that regard in terms of highlighting the work that public employees do and really standing up for the things that they believe in and the services they provide?
It's an ongoing process, and, you know, it's a long story. How do unions protect the rights of their members? And it's all the time being on guard and taking care of all the needs from the very basic to the highest level needs of the workers, and being there all the time, and they never give up and never yield to governments trying to impose other conditions.
How has the labor movement changed over the years throughout your career?
I cannot say that it changed. I just served in the labor movement for 2 years, so it's not such a long time to look. But altogether, we more and more see the phenomenon that the high-tech companies are opposing the union representation. They are against having workers' committees within the companies. But I think that we are after a full circle of experiences, and I think even the government accepts the fact that having a strong main union is better even for the government, because they have somebody to deal with, somebody to sign contracts with, and they don't have to deal with hundreds and thousands of different companies and segments.
And if it's beneficial to the government to have that, do you also find that it improves the morale of the workers having a union, having a labor movement?
No doubt.
Standing
no
behind
doubt.
Them?
No doubt.
What are some examples that maybe you can think of where the people have really benefited by having that labor movement behind them in contract negotiations and things like that?
Wow. I can give you many examples in Israel. For instance, the one of the strongest union in Israel is the Union of the Israeli Aviation Institute, IAI. And they have a very strong workers' committee, and they have the best pension fund conditions in Israel. So it's no doubt when the committee is strong, the workers gain.
Let's shift gears for a minute and talk a little bit more about the center. Tell us about some of the programs that the center has to offer for our audience listening here today.
The agenda of the center is to preserve the legacy of my father, but more important, to see to it that the Israeli society will draw the right conclusions of this traumatic event that took place almost 17 years ago, the assassination of an acting prime minister and minister of defense in a peace rally by a Jew motivated by religious ideology, and actually succeeding to change the path of the peace process. Actually, it came to a slow, and we see what happens today by shooting the prime minister in the back. And from many reasons, the Israeli society refrains from coping, from challenging this event directly. So we are there to show the people the history of the state of Israel, to show how complex our life is, to show our achievements, and to see to it that the future generations will pick dialogue as the best way to solve conflicts and try to lower frustration within the Israeli society, and by that lower violence. This is, in a nutshell, what our agenda is. We do it by different programs. We bring in many children, youngsters, soldiers, tourists to our museum. which is actually telling the full story of the State of Israel and how it intertwines with my father's biography. We did not build a mausoleum. My father was very modest. So by showing the achievements of the State of Israel, he's actually there in every corner. And we would like the Israeli kids to grow up with the right information, knowing facts, so they will not be brainwashed, and giving them the chance to choose the right way.
How important is it to emphasize peace, public dialogue, and tolerance?
I think it's very, very important. It's on our top priorities, because whenever you really succeed in convincing people to sit down and first of all listen to each other, be open to listen to other people's opinions, try to understand, even if you don't agree, try to understand. Maybe there is a point in the other person's allegations. Maybe there is something to listen to him. It creates direct interaction. It lowers hatred. Hatred usually comes from ignorance, from when you are stubborn. And when you put people together and you make them talk to each other and understand each other, no doubt it's the most important thing.
Since the creation of the center, have you found that more people are willing to engage in those public dialogues and peaceful conversations?
Yes, people are willing. I cannot tell you that the Israeli society has become less violent. But, you know, education is a long and Sisyphic process, and we believe in what we are doing, and we are doing the right thing. So in the future, we'll see the fruits of our efforts.
What's your favorite thing about the center?
That's difficult to say. It's my life project. I actually focused on it for the last 10 years. I'm there. I gave up everything else. I resigned from the government, from politics, and I really focused on making this come true, and I'm very proud of it. And I'm very, especially very proud of the museum and the staff that is working for me, fully committed to promote our ideas.
Do you think there are some lessons that the labor movement, both in Israel and the U.S., can take from the mission of the center and apply to their own situations?
No doubt.
And do you see any similarities between the labor movements in the U.S. and that of Israel?
I think the basic ideas and the basic beliefs are the same. I'm very proud to be supported by so many unions in the United States. And it's really up to our American friends who created the connection with the unions and brought them to the table to be so supportive of the Rabin agenda. It's a source of a great pride.
If our listeners out there would like to learn more about the center, how can they find out a little bit more information?
We have a site on internet, and they can turn to our American friends, and they will be fortified with the material. And above all, they're all invited to visit our center in Tel Aviv. I would be more than happy to welcome anybody who comes to Israel and to the center.
Dalia Rabin, the chair of the Yitzhak Rabin Center in Israel, as well as the daughter of the former Israeli prime minister himself. Dalia, thank you so much for your time today and coming to join us.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. I'm your host, Jason Fornicola, and up next, we'll discuss the valuable work done by public employees with Congressman Chris Van Hollen.
Please Planning a family vacation? Did you know through your AFGE membership, you are eligible for discounts for you and your family when you travel to Busch Gardens, Adventure Island, Knott's Berry Farm, and SeaWorld? And if you want to capture those family moments on film, your union membership will help you get a discount on a camcorder or digital camera. Those are just some of the benefits offered by the American Federation of Government Employees, the nation's largest federal workers union, representing some 600,000 workers nationwide. If you are a member, simply go to the AFGE website and click on the Member Benefits tab or call 888-844-2343. That's 888-844-2343. Not a member? Become one. Log on to AFGE.org and click the Join AFGE button on the homepage. AFGE, proud to make America work.
Welcome back to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com, joined by Congressman Chris Van Hollen from Maryland. Congressman, welcome back to the program.
It's great to be with you.
So you are here today, of course, the keynote speaker at the Excellence in Government Conference. What was your main point that you wanted to get across to the audience today?
Well, my main point was really twofold. Number one, we all recognize that in this era of tight budgets, we have to find ways to do more with less. We have to look for innovative ways to be more productive, to be more efficient, to deliver essential services to the American public in a more productive way. But I distinguished that very important goal, which I hope everybody would share, from the goal that some people have, which is to dismantle government. There's a very big difference between trying to make government more efficient and productive and those who would seek to dismantle major parts of the federal government. And the issue of the role of the federal government is really what's at the heart of some of the debates on Capitol Hill, where Democrats and the White House have proposed what we call a balanced approach to reducing the deficit, meaning we got to make some tough cuts, but we also need to have a revenue component from closing a lot of unnecessary tax loopholes and asking very high income earners to pay more. On the other side, you have our Republican colleagues who say, well, we're just going to have to deal with the deficit by slashing government and, frankly, dismantling major parts of government. That's a fundamental debate we're going to have.
You brought up the Budget Control Act, which not many people might know about. Could you talk about the act for a minute?
Sure. The Budget Control Act that was passed last summer as part of the debate over the best approach to reducing the deficit. And what it calls for is about $900 billion in cuts to discretionary programs. Those are the ongoing operations of the U.S. government, both defense and non-defense. $900 billion in cuts over a 10-year period. That's going to require significant belt tightening. That's going to require people to look for better ways of doing the government business. Now, the difference going forward is that Democrats believe that that is an important step, and it would be counterproductive to go a lot deeper and cut a lot farther. That cut that's already in law would already reduce the size of the discretionary budget of the federal government down to Eisenhower-era levels as a percent of the economy. Our Republican colleagues would like to see the non-defense portion of the sequester take effect as well in the out years. That would decimate major parts of the federal government.
Congressman Chris Van Hollen from Maryland, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. I'm your host, Jason Fornicola, and up next, we'll highlight tips for retirement planning for federal employees with First Command Financial Services District Advisor Bob Hill.
Attention AFGE members. Did you know about AFGE's new service to assist you with legal rights issues? It's called the AFGE Legal Rights Attorney Program, which offers free attorney representation in cases brought by AFGE councils and locals on behalf of AFGE members. The program, administered by AFGE's General Counsel's Office, has handled more than 150 cases since 2005 and has won millions of dollars in back pay for our members. The Legal Rights Attorney Program is designed to take cases that will be brought to arbitration, the Merit System Protection Board, or other review boards where both back pay and attorney's fees are available. These cases include removal, suspension, reduction in pay, reduction in grade, and furlough. For information about the program, please email legalrights@afge.org. Not a member? Become one and take advantage of this incredible resource today.
Welcome back to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. We're joined by Bob Hill, the District Advisor for First Command Financial Services. Bob, welcome back to the program. Always a pleasure to have you here.
Thanks, Jason. Thank you for inviting me.
What are some items that have come up with First Command that you're working on to help your clients achieve some financial independence?
We've been very busy with working with federal employees who really want to take control of their situation. And I think it's because many of them realize that they can't focus on the uncertainties of life. What I would say to your audience, Jason, is that they need to focus on what they have control of. As you well can appreciate, we too often get caught up in the day and concern ourselves about things such as what's happening in Europe. And as you know, we recently had the elections in France where they changed governments, in Greece where there was a pushback on government reforms. And we're seeing that, of course, here in the United States with the presidential election right around the corner. And that will, of course, generate a lot of activity, a lot of concern. Those are examples of things that we don't have control over. And so individuals want to work and focus on what they can handle and control.
How do you communicate that to a client, explaining to them what those things are that they can't control and trying not to focus on those so much?
Well, you know, a famous man once said that financial forecasting gives astrology a good name. And so when we sit down with our clients, we really don't want to talk about what the stock market's doing that day or what it's done over the past year. What we do want to learn is what's important to them. In other words, when do they think that they want to be able to retire from federal service? What other important financial goals do they have in their lives, such as sending their children to college or perhaps buying that dream home? You see, the idea is to really learn what we should focus on and, again, what we have control of.
Bob, what are some things that federal employees have control over that they should be focusing on?
Well, this is an interesting time for federal employees for many reasons. One of them is that the TSP board just announced that the Roth option will be available to all federal employees starting now. And so that's an example of a new opportunity that many federal employees will want to take advantage of. It's not for everyone, and I would recommend that they sit down with a financial advisor and to learn whether or not they should participate in the Roth, but it's an example of an opportunity that they should consider. Additionally, the TSP board recently released the results of their most current survey of federal employees. And I think it was very disturbing, Jason, to learn that 5% of all federal employees are not contributing to the Thrift Savings Plan. And the reason given by those federal employees was that they didn't understand TSP. Among FERS employees, 18% of FERS who were interviewed said that they are not fully participating in the program. In other words, they're not contributing up to the first 5% of their ability to do so and have that free money, if you will, the matching money from the federal government. So those are examples of cases where either financial literacy or just an understanding of how they can take advantage of the programs in place will help them to be in a better position in the future.
On the subject of the Roth TSP, can you explain to the audience what the difference is between the Roth TSP and the traditional TSP?
Well, as you know, the traditional TSP is a program set aside very similar to a corporate 401k plan. The dollars you put into the traditional TSP are pre-tax dollars, so it reduces your taxable income now. As the dollars grow in the account, they're not taxed, and when you take the money out, typically at age 59 and a half and older, then all of the dollars that you have in your TSP account are taxed as ordinary income. The Roth option allows you to participate in the same program, but the dollars you're going to put into the account will be taxed at the time that you put them in. But the beauty of the TSP Roth, Jason, is that those dollars will never be taxed again. So you can appreciate how that could be a very important benefit for many people because they're going to have income someday down the road that won't be touched by taxes.
Bob, are you finding that federal employees are inquisitive about the Roth TSP and how it can help them achieve their goals?
We have received many calls from federal employees, both our clients and others who learn about us and who want to sit down with us and talk about whether or not it's right for them. And that's one thing I would say is that each person or each federal employee should consider their specific situation and to determine if it's right for them, Jason.
So as we're looking at planning for federal employees going into retirement at any stage of their careers, what are some other things that federal employees should be aware of when they're planning their retirement?
Well, as you know, most of us have other goals that are, as we say, pre-retirement goals. And college education is a perfect example of that. TSP is not set up to be a college planning source or a source of dollars for your children's college. So that's an example of a part of your financial plan that needs to be taken into account early, so that, in fact, you will have some or all of the dollars you need for college for your child or grandchild at when they need those dollars. So that's an example of other planning goals that are very important to feds, but at the same time, sometimes are overlooked because the emphasis is on thrift savings plan.
And how about rainy day funds, things like that?
Well, too often we see that people really have not thought through the idea of having a rainy day fund, in other words, emergency savings. First Command has a financial behaviors index that we conduct twice a year with federal employees. And our most recent survey, Jason, showed that one-third of all federal employees that we interviewed, and we interview 1,000 each time, are very concerned about their position and their ability to stay in federal service. That's an example of how individuals can compensate for that by having at least some dollars in a savings account, so that if in fact they do find that they're going to have to transition, make a career transition, or they have other unexpected needs, that they have a source of dollars. Because too often, as you well know, individuals wind up getting overextended on credit.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. We're joined by Bob Hill, the District Advisor for First Command Financial Services. Bob, how about other things outside of a rainy day fund, outside of your pre-retirement goals, college savings, as you noted, and of course, saving for retirement through a TSP? What are some other things that federal employees should be paying attention to?
We know we're entering the summer season here, Jason, and I bet that most Americans have spent more time planning for their summer vacation than they have for their financial future. An example of that is, to your point, about the other things that they need to consider. For example, we think it's important to consider the what-ifs of life, and that really falls under the umbrella of risk management. As you well know, federal employees have federal employee group life insurance. They're offered long-term care insurance, which they should consider. And we also speak to many federal employees who tell us that one of their concerns is disability, because financial planning really isn't important, and you really can't take action to plan if you don't have an income. So that's why all federal employees need to learn what their disability income benefit is. And frankly, this is a soft spot in the federal employee program. So we sit down with a lot of federal employees to talk about how they can take action to have a disability income policy in place that they own, so that if in fact they do become disabled or have a disease or perhaps are in an accident which takes them away from the workforce for an extended period of time, once their sick leave and annual leave has been expended, they're going to have some dollars that will allow them to maintain their household, their standard of living. This is an example of how you have to take care of all the what-ifs in life, as well as planning for your retirement.
Bob, as we look through and discuss these items, what's the breakdown of savings that a person should be focusing on?
We find that many individuals want to have perhaps 3 or 4 months' worth of savings. In other words, their income or their monthly expenses times 3 or 4. And that's an example of how, and for many people, as you can appreciate, Jason, that's a goal rather than a starting point. And so we would recommend to them to build up their savings to a point where they have perhaps 3 or 4 months' worth of expenses set aside in something very simple as a savings account. Or if they know that they every year or periodically they have a major expense such as a family trip or a family reunion that costs so much money, start setting the money aside now for that expenditure that they know that they want to have in the future.
How have you found your clients reacting to these tips and goals? Do you find that people are interested in learning and applying those elements to their lives?
We do many financial literacy workshops at federal agencies, brown bag lunches. And, of course, we sit down one-on-one with our prospective clients or clients, and we go through these key steps of financial planning with them, and it really is something that's important to people. Some individuals just have to start out with the basics. In other words, let's get out of debt, let's build up our savings. Let's review what I'm doing in Thrift Savings Plan. In other words, some individuals really have to take a more step-by-step or incremental approach to their financial planning. That's understandable. That's okay. At least they're making the start on the long journey toward becoming financially successful.
On this notion of focusing on things that you can control versus staying away from things that you can't control, how do you find people respond to that in terms of trying to stay away from things like following the stock market every day? How do people respond to those pieces of advice that you give?
As you well know, one thing we do know is that the stock market will go up and it will go down. And you have to really ask yourself, if I'm in the Thrift Savings Plan program and I have 5, 10, 15 or more years toward retirement, does it really matter what the stock market did yesterday or today? It's something that gets a lot of attention, and people, I think, focus too much on that. They really should be looking at the long-term goal. And if you have a basic belief that the United States will be a strong economy in the future and that our country is going to remain successful, then it's only reasonable to think that you will be able to, through long-term investing, be able to achieve the goals that are important to you.
Throughout your career, Bob, how have you seen the industry change?
I think that it's more of a change in the clients. And what I mean by that, Jason, is that individuals realize that stock performance and the stock market, while very important, is not the beginning and end of a financial plan, that they really do need to fold in the other aspects of life, such as savings and risk management that we talked about earlier, into a financial plan, as opposed to being totally focused on what the stock market is doing or what their stocks or TSP is doing.
Bob, as we close out here, what is the single most important piece of advice that you would give someone who is starting out their careers trying to establish a level of financial independence?
I think it's very important that individuals sit down, whether it's with a professional or with someone who can give them some sound advice, to talk about how they can best use the dollars that they do have available, because that's the key to success. Just get started. And so if you're putting money into TSP, great. If you're putting money aside to savings, that's wonderful and important, as well as, again, risk management. But start at a level that you are comfortable with and can consistently contribute to. And over time, as you get pay raises or step promotions or grade changes, use some of those new dollars toward improving your financial plan. It will make all the difference.
It sounds almost like you're saying it's not so much how much money you make, but what you do with the money that you do make.
That is exactly correct, because too many people, either through procrastination or just misunderstanding, think that they have to have a lot of money to have a financial plan. That's not at all correct. The idea is to get started and stay focused, stay disciplined, and have that discipline that will allow you then to continue to put money aside, even when we have all these uncertainties that are going on in the United States or around the world.
Bob Hill, District Advisor for First Command Financial Services. Bob, it is always a pleasure to have you on the program. Thank you for coming today.
My pleasure, Jason.
Thank you to our guest this week, AFGE National Secretary Treasurer J. David Cox, Itzhak Rabin Center Chair Dalia Rabin, Congressman Chris Van Hollen, and First Command Financial Services District Advisor Bob Hill. I'm your host, Jason Fornicola, and that's The View from Inside Government.
Thank you for listening to Inside Government, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power and MetLife. Attention AFGE members, are you in need of a new computer or home appliance but can't spare the upfront cash? Discover Purchasing Power, an exclusive benefit available to AFGE members where you can buy brand name laptops, tablets, and home appliances through 12 months of easy payroll deduction. No upfront cash or credit check required. Shop now and get an 8% AFGE member-only discount with promo code AFGE member. That's all one word. Learn more. Visit shoppurchasingpower.com today.
Did you know MetLife Auto and Home has valuable deals on insurance for AFGE members that could save them hundreds every year? Benefits include special discounts just for being an AFGE member. And in most states, a deductible credit for claim-free driving up to $250. To see how much you could save, call the AFGE Benefits Hotline at 1-888-844-2343 to get the members-only phone number from MetLife. That's 1-888-844-2343. Underwritten by Metropolitan.